Breakfast with Aaron and Helen, 5 to 9 weekdays on Hope 103.2.
One of the strange side effects of watching reality TV is you start to really feel like you know the people on the show, that they're your friends. So when one of them gets a mysterious illness that makes her go blind in one eye and have to leave the show, you really want to know if she's okay. From My Kitchen Rules, after she had to fly out of Darwin in a medical emergency last night on the show, Kelly from Victoria, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, the obvious question, how are you?
I'm okay now. 100% vision, so.
Oh, fantastic.
It's good to have it back.
That just sounds terrifying. What's the condition that made you lose the vision?
So it's called optic neuritis, which is the optic nerve that connects to the brain is damaged or inflamed, and so it's not actually sending correct messages, and you gradually lose eyesight.
Look, I just can't imagine that how scary that would be initially when you start to realise, hang on, I can't see that well over that eye anymore. Run us through that, especially being on such a high-stress situation of the show like you're on.
Yeah, it was a little bit odd how it came on, and it did come on quite gradually. So it was over a course of probably a week and a half that it went from just a tiny sort of annoying little blind spot to complete vision loss in one eye. So, look, we were probably in the best place possible for seeing some really great eye specialists because they've got some fantastic people in Northern Territory, but it is still a little bit terrifying, yeah.
Mm. And I know you went on the show with the dream of opening your own restaurant. Did it affect those dreams as well as your involvement on the show?
No, absolutely not.
Great.
Still very, very keen to do that. And, yeah, that's what we're aiming for now.
Is there a chance with this condition, does it just go away, or is it something that could linger for a bit longer and maybe come back again in the future?
Yeah, the possibility is that it may come back. But there's no saying when or how, and it's going to come out of nowhere and probably the same thing all over again.
My goodness. And had it ever bothered you before?
No, that was the first time.
Crazy.
Yeah, well, he's hoping it doesn't, for your sake. But what's the plan of action? What's your, I guess, your five-year plan with your restaurant? What do you hope to do, and how soon do you hope to get out there and do it?
Look, we're hoping that in the next few months we'll definitely have something up and going. It'll be, just a smallish bar, which hopefully we can serve some great food at as well.
Great. Well, all the best with it. Look, I hope you win the ongoing battle with your eye health for sure, and all the best with your restaurant plans together.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Some people adopt a pet. We've decided to take a different angle on it and adopt a vet. He'll be dropping by regularly to help us with expert advice on all things furry and feathered. Dr. Mike, good morning.
Good morning to you. How are you doing?
Well, thank you. When did the love of animals start for you?
You know, from a very, very young age. And if I ever meet anyone these days who's saying, oh, I was thinking about getting, you know, being a vet or a vet nurse, I just absolutely encourage them. It's hard to imagine. 25 years ago, I graduated as a vet, and it's been 25 years of amazing experience, amazing people, and amazing pets. So it started early, and it's been a real lifetime, which you can probably tell from the grey hairs. It's been a very full lifetime.
Do you watch the vet shows on TV and everything?
I've got to confess that I do. Uh-huh. Some of it's like maybe like vet envy. I think, why don't I look like that guy? And
which vet you could be talking about. No.
And why don't I live where he lives?
That Dr. Harry, those hats are a real point of envy.
Different vet. Yeah. It's a fascinating insight. You can relate to what they're doing. So, I mean, the joys that they experience, you've experienced and the frustrations, you know them. So, yeah, I got to admit, family time, we just sit down and we watch them. It's good fun.
That's great. And talk about bringing your work home. How many pets have you got at your place?
You know, I say that we've got a blended family because we've got two dogs and two cats. And, some people are big dog people and some people are small dog people. And so we were a big dog family. So we had the most beautiful golden retriever, Rahani. And she lived to a ripe old age, passed away a couple of years ago, which was pretty tough. And we now have the springiest, naughtiest two poodles. So two miniature poodles and two white cats whose mission in life is to remain seated on my black pants as much. So when my wife and I get out of the car, like imagine we go out somewhere and we just do a quick, you know, are you got any white fluff on you? No, you got any white fluff on you? No, we're good to go. Mm-hmm. So two dogs, two cats. It's a mixed family.
How does it go with animals, I suppose, different to humans and being a doctor for humans? The human can say, I've got a sore arm or, you know, I've got this niggly feeling in my chest, you know, is it, you know, I'm going to have a heart attack or something. But animals, they just, like, bark and meow and lick and stuff. How do you know?
Yeah, no, and it's, that is really the challenge in the profession. And what we have learnt is that owners are really the key, you know. So, sure, we're going to do a complete physical examination. There are tests available to us now which, you know, weren't available 25 years ago when I graduated. And so, I mean, there's a lot of technology out there, but it's really the owners who know their pets, mm-hmm. who often give us the best clues. And so, you know, they come in and they say, you know, I can't put my finger on it, but, you know, he's just not right. When they say that, you don't go, oh, dog looks okay to me. You go, these owners know. So, you know, that's the time to dig a little more. There's a lot more technology these days, so we can do some amazing tests.
Yeah, right. Rather than waiting for, does it hurt when I press here, puss? And getting your hand clawed off.
It's going to hurt.
So, you've got some tips for us this morning based on something you've been going through at your place recently.
Yes, my wife and I. So, our family, and so we've got five kids plus four pets. So, it's kind of maybe more like a zoo than a household.
Yes. Uh-huh.
We've just built a new house, and 3 weeks ago we moved in, and it's been a pretty big challenge for the family. But yeah, you know, it made me think that it's also been a pretty big challenge for our pets. And so there were just a couple of things that came to mind. I thought, if there's someone there, you know, out there who's about to go through the process of moving, you know, there's a couple of things that I've been through in the last couple of weeks that I thought, oh boy, I'd like to share those just so that you didn't go through the same traps. I think like the first message is definitely know where the dog food is on the first night. Like even if you don't know where your car keys are, know where the dog food is. I mean, pets are so perceptive to change. You know, they've got a different radar to us. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as soon as we got the first packing boxes out, you know, the cats went missing. I mean, they're indoor cats, but, you know, we'd be packing boxes and we'd say, where's Bella? Where's Bronte? Didn't know. The dogs were really upset. And so I think if we're thinking about, you know, if we're going to go through that traumatic process of moving house, there are ways that we can make it easier on our pets. One really good tip is to see if there's either a family member or a friend who can just even babysit them for a week. You know, I've had friends who've actually, you know, they've got a really reputable boarding kennel that their pets like going into, and that's what they've done. They've actually put them into a boarding kennel for a week so that they can go through that painful transition process, and, you know, the pets are not thinking, what is going on here? Mm-hmm. Everything, you know, everything's strange. Everything's moving. So, you know, they've gone out of one house into the boarding kennels. They've come back into a new house, and they go, okay, this looks good.
At least I'm not at the kennel anymore. Whatever else you want to dish out for me.
I mean, the second thing to think about is, you know, some of our dogs and cats are on daily medications. They might be on special diets. And so really sort of putting together a care pack, even down to, you know, where are the dogs' leads? So, I mean, we got to the new house and we think, where are the dogs' leads? We need to take them for a walk. And so can you imagine me, like, with a bit of rope? Dr. Mike, the dog and the rope, going for it, because I couldn't find those leads. So, you know, just putting together a care pack, things that they might need, especially any medications they've got. And then I think the third thing is, like, when you get to the new place, think about some of those things, like, you know, I think every dog or cat should be microchipped. So, mm-hmm. So updating the microchip details, updating the registration details. I mean, we move, so like, from one council area to another. And so, I mean, there's so many things to think about, but they're pretty critical things. A lot of pets actually go missing at the time of a move.
Mm.
So definitely getting all those details sort of up to scratch and changed.
Great advice and logical stuff, but in the madness of moving, it's easy to forget that.
Absolutely. First night, no dog food, no dog leads. I think I'm a bad pet owner.
Oh, no.
I think I am.
It's nice for a vet to say that, and obviously not true because you do a lot of care there, but that's comforting. If you've got a question for Dr. Mike, mm-hmm. give us a call, 1-300-40-2020. Got John on the phone with a problem with a big dog. G'day, John. How are you going?
Yeah, well, thanks, Aaron. Yeah, morning, guys. Yeah, look, we've got a large dog, a bit bigger than a golden retriever, 17 months old. and she has the habit of mouthing. So it's a behavioural issue rather than an illness issue, I suppose.
Yeah, no, absolutely. John, what's her name?
Her name is Sasha.
Sasha, that is such a great name. And what breed is she?
Bernese Mountain Dog.
They are just an amazing dog, aren't they? I mean, so when you take Sasha out walking, do people comment on her? Do they go, you know, they go, whoa, nice dog. Do you find you get much response from people?
A lot of response all the time.
Yeah, no, do you ever get the, you know, that's kind of not a dog, that's more like a horse. How big is Sasha now in terms of, you know?
She's about a bit over 40 kilos.
Yep. Yep, that's a pretty, that is an impressive dog. Just that, you know, a couple of quick things come to mind. Have you been through any basic obedience training with Sasha?
Yes, yeah. We went to the puppies school, yep. And we've had dogs previously, including a Bernese before.
Wow, okay.
So we went through full obedience training with that, so we were comfortable ourselves in how to undertake obedience training with a dog, yeah.
Yeah. Now, John, it sounds to me like you're doing all the right things. Number one, you've had some experience with a big dog before, and that's absolutely critical. Number two, you've started the path in terms of, you know, that basic obedience training. That's like the foundation that needs to be laid in every dog before we can sort of build on it. Some of the things that come to mind, with these large dogs, it's really critical to understand that they mature so much later than small dogs. So small dogs, you know, 6 to 12 months of age, they've kind of gone through puberty, they've grown up, and their brain cells are multiplying and they're kind of grown up. With your larger breeds of dogs, they mature a lot later. And so you'll see some play behavior, you'll see sort of this mouthing behavior can be like a pack behavior, or like a social a socialization thing, which will appear and persist in the larger breeds for a lot longer. Did you notice that with your previous dog, that you know, they sort of grew up later?
Well, I definitely grew up later.
Yeah,
absolutely about that. But this particular habit, she had the other one we had different sort of idiosyncrasies. But
yes,
this is the particular one with this one. So you think it's an issue that eventually she'll grow out of?
Yeah. I mean, two things come to mind. One is that we need to be both patient, but also really intentional. So we've got to say, like, imagine if you said, someone came and said, I don't know, what's with my teenager? He just wants to stay in his room and play loud music. And you go, well, actually, that's what teenagers do. So it's a little bit, you know, you say, what's with my dog? He just wants to play and mouth and that sort of thing. You say, well, he's kind of like a teenage dog. But in the same way, so like, we need to be patient with him, but also we need to be setting those boundaries. So a similar way, I definitely think it would be worthwhile going back to where you had that basic obedience training and just saying, look, this is a specific issue that I've got. Any tips there? A dog behaviouralist or some dog trainers, I think that would be a really good place to start to explore it, and better to get on it now while they're going through, while he's going through this stage, rather than be like 3 years of age and he's still doing. So patience, but be really intentional about it. I reckon get some more advice from an expert, so hands-on, face-to-face, and that could really help to resolve that problem.
Good stuff. Thanks for your question, John. Thank you, Dr. Mike. Look, we've got Tina on the line as well. She's got an issue with her Maltese dog. G'day, Tina.
Hi, Dr. Mike.
Good morning, Tina. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing fine. I've got a white Malteser.
Now what's is it a boy white Malteser or a girl white Malteser?
It's a boy.
And what's his name?
Cheeky.
I've just got to ask, who chose a name like Cheeky?
I did.
And, you know, I think you've been setting yourself up for problems right there. You name a dog Cheeky, you're asking for trouble, surely.
Well, he's been all right, but it was a very good dog when I was in my other home. But when I moved in and lived with my mum, we had to put him out with her dog.
Yes, yes.
And we used to sneak him in of a night time without my mum knowing. But he's a very, how do you say it? He's a jealous dog.
Yes.
Okay, and he actually peed on my son's pillow.
Yeah. And is that the main, like, sort of weeing inside? Is that the main concern that you've got today?
He has got a doggy door.
Yes.
And he frets in going out and coming in. Yeah, I don't know why.
Okay. And so, I mean, some of the picture that you've painted there sort of gives us some clues about what's going on. So, I mean, what I'm understanding from you is that he's kind of, maybe he's weeing inside and there are some, maybe some separation issues there as well.
Well, I do work.
Yes.
And my neighbours, they take him during the day just so that it's not a full day for him to be on his own.
Cool. So he
nice
does.
Nice neighbours. Yeah. That's lovely.
And that is a really, really good solution to that situation. A couple of things come to mind. Number one, dogs, we were talking about this earlier and saying that dogs are basically much, much more sensitive to change than perhaps we sometimes give them credit for. So moving house, like moving from one place to another, introducing a new animal into the pack. So I think you said that like your mother's dog was there as well. Any of these sorts of things can just really make them feel out of sorts. The way that they sometimes express that is with territorial marking. In other words, they're sort of thinking, what's my space? Where do I belong? You know, where can I feel safe? And that they'll actually, and then they, you know, you said he frets a little bit when he's away from you. He's really not that happy with the doggy door. In some ways, I guess I'm sensing that he's maybe just a little bit out of sorts. And then when they're in that situation, then they can do strange things like that, you know, weeing inside it with it in a territorial way, sort of saying, well, this is my place and I belong here. A couple of really quick suggestions. If there's a way that you can produce stability and routine into his life, that's a really, really good thing. Anything that he knows, you know, this is my safe place, maybe some bedding inside, a room that just belongs to him, maybe not being so much with the other dogs, maybe some time spent with you just sort of one-on-one, so he goes, okay, I'm safe here, that's good. Second thing with the doggy door, maybe get some treats that he really, really loves and just do some time back and forth every day. You go through the door, you get the treat. You go through the door, you get the treat. And you got to make this the happy door. I go through the door, I get the treat. It's good. You know,
yeah,
I'm going to go through that door. It's a good door.
I'd go through the door. Little choppy bar there. Good stuff.
I think in this one,
yep,
pretty complex, but some tips there on just how to make him feel a lot more comfortable.
Cool. Thanks for the question, Tina. Thank you again, Dr. Mike. Oh, one or two more? Really, in a bit?
Happy to start.
Yeah, okay, yeah. All right. 1-300-40-2020 if you've got a question for Dr. Mike the vet.
Victoria, you've got two cats, but one of them is a new addition to the house. What's going on?
Yes. Okay, so I have the other cat I've got, the older one, is probably just over a year old.
Right.
And she's from from Animal Welfare League.
Right, right, great.
And then I've got a 9-week-old kitten now, which I got about a week and a half ago.
Yep, yep.
Because my friend's cat had a litter and I've wanted a second cat for quite some time.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and the older cat's not reacting very well. She's wiping and last night I caught them rumbling, which caused me to separate both of them.
Sure. Now, what's the older cat's name?
Abby.
Nice. And the younger cat's name?
Lucy.
Oh, I like Lucy. I reckon I'd actually like to name a daughter Lucy. I reckon it's just a really fun name. So we've got Abby and Lucy. Now, so a couple of things here. Really, really common issue is, you know, how do we integrate a new pet into the household without just, like, completely turning the place into a zoo. How long have they been together now? When did you get Lucy?
It'll be 2 weeks this Saturday.
Okay. So, I mean, one thing to be aware of there is that we're still in the very, very early days. The second thing, and so basically we have to have in our mind that if we introduce a new pet into the household, number one, we need to take it slow. Number two, we need to be patient and realise that there's going to be some adjustment that's required. But almost always, There's definitely light at the end of the tunnel. It's almost always going to be a happy outcome in the end. But there's a couple of things that we can do to help out. Mm-hmm. First thing, probably need to remember that these guys are both still, I mean, naturally, Lucy's a kitten. But as far as Abby, did you say about 12 months old?
Probably a little bit older.
Yeah. But still in lots of ways, especially when you introduce a new kitten, they're both still kind of kittens. So. Yeah. And when you see young animals play together, it can sometimes get really rough and tumble. So seeing them, like you said, they were rumbling, that may not be such a bad thing. If you see young animals together, they'll often, you know, they'll go at it pretty hard, sparring each other, mm-hmm. biting each other, and like a full roll, commando roll thing going on.
If they didn't, what would YouTube be full of?
Yeah, exactly.
It would cease to exist.
Exactly. And so just a couple of quick things. Separation can be good. One thing that can really help them is if you can imagine, like, put a screen door between them, but just allow them to be either side of the screen door so they can see each other, smell each other, but maybe not have interaction. So in other words, if the going gets too heavy, just separate them by a screen door. That way they get used to the idea of each other, but there's no argy-bargy. Second thing is be patient. And the third thing is, I actually, from what you're saying, I think it's actually going okay. And you might be surprised that in as little as a week to 2 weeks from now, they'll be best of friends. You'll see them sleeping together at night. And I reckon having two pets together, it is just a lovely, lovely thing.
Oh, so, seeing them groom each other.
Yeah. So be patient. You know, definitely do some time out with the screen door between them if necessary, but know that there's some light at the end of it. They're going to be best mates, without a doubt.
Good stuff. Thank you for your question, Victoria. Dr. Mike, you're a champion.
Oh, it's good to be here. It's great to be in the zone with you guys.
Have you ever tried that screen door trick with the kids?
I mean, the really silly thing is you separate them. You know, like they are around. They don't want to be together. You separate them. I miss you so much.
I want
to go back.
Oh, that's sweet. Yeah. Thank you. We will talk again soon. Thank you so much for coming
Look
in today.
To Great guys.
Breakfast with Aaron and Helen, 5 to 9 weekdays on Hope 103.2.